counsel. Last case for argument is Yabuthi versus Ashcroft.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, counsel. I may please the court. My name is Babatunde Irukara, and I'm going to be arguing for the petitioner, Mr. Ngozi. Your Honor, the immigration judge decided that Mr. Ngozi was not eligible for asylum in the United States. The immigration judge, therefore, did not consider his application for asylum, but treated his application also as a concomitant application for withholding of removal and protection under the Torture Convention. As a matter of background, these create different standards, and there are no discretionary issues in these types of application. The Board of Immigration Appeals affirmed the decision of the immigration judge without an opinion, essentially making the final decision, the final agency determination, the decision of the immigration judge. There are a few problems with this decision. First, the one-year rule. Mr. Ngozi arrived in the United States March 2000. He at the airport was apprehended. He had a credible fair interview, which apparently is the only mechanism when you request asylum in the United States to initially evaluate your claim of asylum in the United States. He was in detention, and he was within the control of the government and the Executive Office for Immigration Review. The first opportunity he had to again indicate his request for asylum in the United States was when he retained counsel who filed a motion to change venue. This was in August of 2000, approximately 5 months after he arrived in the United States. He pleaded to the allegation and sought the relief of asylum. It was on that basis that the case was transferred, the venue was transferred to Chicago. Upon arriving in Chicago, the first master calendar date was in February of 2001. Where he again said, I would be requesting asylum through counsel. At that point, the court set him for another calendar date, April 26, 2001, requesting the asylum application be filed in court on that day. And that's exactly what happened. However, at the merit hearing in January of 2002, the court determined that he did not file the application within the one-year statute. However, even if that was the case, he had clearly indicated his indication that he was going to be requesting asylum from the United States from the day he entered the United States. And the procedural nature of the case clearly showed that that was the case. Now, the immigration judge admits in his ruling, though, that the instruction and the manual from the chief judge of immigration court is that this defensive asylum application be filed in open court at a master calendar hearing. And that's exactly what counsel representing Mr. Ngozi at the time did. There was no other opportunity for him to have filed the application, and by the immigration judge not considering his asylum application, which creates a different standard from the withholding or the torture convention, his due process rights had been violated. Now I'll talk a little about the credibility finding of the immigration judge. It's a complete obfuscation of what the real law is and an application of the facts to the law in this case. Now the government would have us believe that at one point when he entered the United States, he was seeking asylum based on his religion, being a Jehovah's Witness. And at a certain point, at the merit hearing, the basis of his asylum now became his race and his nationality. What the government is also not telling us is at the time he arrived in the United States, the record is replete with issues as to where would he be returned to. Of course, he doesn't have a problem being a Jehovah's Witness in Ethiopia. He had become a Jehovah's Witness as far back as 1989. He was claiming that if you would be returning me to Eritrea, and there's a lot of background information to show that there's a problem if you're a Jehovah's Witness and you're being returned to Eritrea. However, also at an initial hearing, the immigration judge determined when Mr. Ngozi failed to designate a country, the immigration judge determined should removal become necessary, I designate Ethiopia. And the government at that time agreed to that. He would be removed to Ethiopia. At that time, the coloration of his claim is absolutely not incredible. He had said that, you know, If you're returning me to Ethiopia, my problem there is nationality and race. I was born and raised in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. My parents were from Eritrea. My father has been arrested to be deported to Eritrea. They were making arrangements to deport me to Eritrea. These are the reasons why I don't want to go to Ethiopia. The same judge turns around and says, well, there's no problem with you being a Jehovah's Witness if you go to Eritrea. That because they know the Jehovah's Witnesses do not like to fight a war, more than likely you will not be conscripted to fight. And based on that, he believes that his fear of returning to Eritrea, the Jehovah's Witness, is fallacious. I think what is more fallacious, really, is whether the Eritrean government were going to consider who was a Jehovah's Witness in determining which men they were conscripting to fight a war against Ethiopia.
But now, what about the what about the government's argument that a finding by the immigration judge that the asylum application was filed more than a year after the person came to the United States, and even if the judge is rejecting, you know, an extraordinary circumstances argument, it's just not judicially reviewable?
That also is an incorrect argument. And even if we were going to accept that argument, you know, what we're reviewing here is the final decision of an immigration judge. And every aspect of the final decision of the immigration judge is reviewable for arbitrariness or abuse of discretion. I would think that this being part of his final decision, it's not a preliminary matter. He did not make a determination at a master calendar saying, well, I'm looking at this application. It is not permissible. It was part, he took evidence. He took testimony on his application for asylum and made a ruling subsequent to that, which formed part of his final ruling. And if that is the case, then the government cannot come now and make the argument, because essentially what would happen is you can allow people to make all kinds of applications, take the testimony and say, you know what, even if this looked right, we would still not grant it, and no court can review that. I think that would substantially limit the power of the courts to review the decisions of administrative agencies, and clearly could not have been the intention of Congress when it was legislating that statute.
Is part of your argument that he was misled into filing it late?
I don't know if he was misled, but what I know is that the mechanism was such that there was no other way he could have filed it before he filed it. And the exceptions to the one-year rule clearly would show that, you know, there's a reasonable or extraordinary ground for the delay. This delay here is reasonable. We're talking about a month and a week, and maybe 2 weeks after he arrived, when from the date he arrived, the only reason he had remained in the United States was because he was going to be pursuing an application for asylum. But he said that at the airport, and even before the immigration court, his counsel already made that the basis of the change of venue to Chicago. It was very clear, and the court did at the first hearing say, file this application in open court on this day. There was no way he could have come into open court on a day before that the court set. And apart from that, the credibility issues, like I said, are just, you know, the court creates additional burdens of proof that are not contemplated by statute or the asylum jurisprudence. He says that a letter which he excluded was not verifiable. I do not understand what role Mr. Negusi could have played in the verification of the letter. At best, he put the letter forward. If the FDL, that is the forensic laboratory, says we cannot verify this, I think a reasonable weight should have been given to the letter, not it excluded. And then you turn around and say, well, because we don't have anything on record, there's nothing to establish exactly the things that were in that letter. I'd reserve the rest of my time for my rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Erickson. Mr. Cohn?
May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Cohn, and I represent the Attorney General, John Ashcroft. Your Honors, the immigration judge found that petitioner lacked credibility for several independent reasons, including the fact that he contradicted himself on why he's seeking asylum. Because a reasonable fact finder would not be compelled to disagree with the immigration judge, and because in any event petitioner waived his challenge to the IJ's finding by not raising it in his opening brief, this court should affirm the decision below. Whether or not
petitioner... Apart from the one-year problem?
That's right, Your Honor. This court has to address the credibility issue in either case because the withholding and the CAT claims are based only on the credibility determination. And for asylum, there are two bases to affirm the immigration judge, either credibility or the 1 year.
Right.
But you're going to address credibility anyway.
For the withholding, yeah.
Exactly, Your Honor. And as for credibility, it seems pretty clear to me that petitioner was incredible. The immigration judge provided several independent reasons why the petitioner lacked credibility. There were at least four significant inconsistencies which went to the heart of the claim. One of these inconsistencies, as noted, is the inconsistency regarding why he's seeking asylum. And this court, in two recent opinions, has recognized that this very type of inconsistency is a significant one, one which provides substantial evidence for affirming the immigration judge. Those two cases are Oforji and Capric. In both those cases, the petitioner was inconsistent as to why he was seeking asylum, and for that reason, the court determined that substantial evidence supported the immigration judge's conclusion. And again, it's important to note that the standard of review is substantial evidence, because even if petitioner can provide an explanation for these inconsistencies, and he hasn't, he's waived them, but even if he did, that would not be good enough. A plausible explanation is insufficient because the standard of review is substantial evidence. Petitioner has to provide an explanation that's so compelling that a reasonable fact finder would be compelled to believe that the immigration judge erred. And that's simply not the case here. In addition to the inconsistency regarding the reason why he's seeking asylum, there's also an inconsistency as to what his background is. Originally, when he came into the country, he contended that he was Eritrean, and he presented a passport which he claimed was valid. He then later admitted to the immigration judge that it was an invalid passport, and he knew
it
wasn't.
Well, you said in your brief both his parents were born in Eritrea.
That's what petitioner contends, Your Honor. But there's an inconsistency as to what
country. Well, you just recite this as a fact. You don't say that this is something he... Or maybe, I don't know, maybe you're summarizing his evidence. It's unclear.
That's right, Your Honor. But even aside from the issue of where his parents come from, there's a question of where he himself comes from. It's a separate issue. And when he first came to this country, he told an immigration officer that he himself came from Eritrea and had an Eritrean passport. But he later admitted that this passport was a forgery, that he paid someone in Kenya $400 for it. He was not Eritrean, he claimed, but rather Ethiopian. And the fact that he submitted a passport, which he admits is a fraud, confirms that we cannot respect his credibility. In effect, he admitted that he lied to the immigration officer by saying the passport was valid. In light of that fact, clearly a reasonable fact finder would not be compelled to believe that the immigration judge erred. There's also an inconsistency, Your Honors, as to why he left Kenya. He went to Kenya after leaving Ethiopia. Originally, he told the immigration officer that he left Kenya because he was being harassed by the Kenyans. But then subsequently, in his hearing before the immigration judge, he admitted that the reason was actually economic. He left Kenya because he wanted to come to the United States sooner and make some more money to support some relatives. In addition to all that, Your Honor, there's also the lack of specificity in his testimony, and there's the demeanor.
Was he deported by Ethiopia to Kenya, or is that a question on which, what does the immigration judge think about that?
The immigration judge didn't know whether or not to believe that, Your Honor, because the only evidence that petitioner had for that was his own self-serving testimony. And as the immigration judge found, we can't believe that testimony for all the inconsistencies and other reasons that the immigration judge noted. The immigration judge is clearly in the best position to determine credibility. The immigration judge can evaluate demeanor. He's there. He can see the witness. He can hear the witness. As this court recognized in the Pop case and the Ahmad case, the immigration judge's firsthand experience with the witness definitely gives him an advantage in evaluating credibility.
Mm-hmm.
If this court has no further questions.
What about the jurisdictional argument?
I think that's an alternative reason to affirm the immigration judge on the asylum claim. The statute's clear, and six of your sister circuits have recognized that there is no jurisdiction, at least not in direct review. There's no jurisdiction. So even if petitioner has an argument for extraordinary circumstances, and I don't think he does, it's not for this court to review.
Well, the argument here, at least putting it in the best light for the petitioner, is that it was the court's fault that he filed late.
I think that's inaccurate, Your Honor, because there are a couple different occasions in which he could have submitted an asylum application. First of all, when his attorney filed the motion for change of venue in August of 2000, he could have submitted the application then. He also could have done so at the master calendar hearing in February 2001. In addition, he could have done it between the master calendar hearings. So basically what happened was petitioner is now trying to blame the immigration judge for something that his counsel failed to do. But again, in any event, that's not an issue this court needs to reach, A, because it lacks jurisdiction, and B, because in any event, it can just dispose of this case on the credibility grounds.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Irokura, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll respond to what counsel has said. First, Your Honor, right now, we filed at least two motions seeking to obtain a stay from Mr. Noguchi's removal from the United States because the Immigration Service seeks to remove him to Eritrea, which is totally different from where the immigration judge ordered that he be removed to. He has not even had an opportunity to present a claim of any fear of persecution to Eritrea. He's presented a claim for persecution to Ethiopia. The judge ordered removal to Ethiopia, but the Immigration Service has served him with a letter which is part of the record and the motion that he will be removed to Eritrea. The reason why he has not been removed as at now, which has been overseen.
But if his argument is that Ethiopia persecutes people of Eritrean ancestry, wouldn't he prefer to be in Eritrea?
No, he would. But the reason why they have actually been unable to remove him also is because Ethiopia would not accept him. And now they're trying to obtain a removal to Eritrea.
But so isn't that where he wants to be?
He doesn't even want to be either way.
Well, he wants to be in the United States, of course. But as between Ethiopia and Eritrea, wouldn't he prefer to be in Eritrea?
He has a claim of asylum to Eritrea based on being a Jehovah's Witness that has not been explored because the immigration judge, as a preliminary matter, said you will be removed to Ethiopia. So he's not even explored the basis of removal to Eritrea. And that's where the inconsistency that the government is trying to create comes from. And it's not really an inconsistency. Regarding the passport issue, traveling on valid or invalid passports are issues that routinely arise in asylum claims. And page 42 of the brief clearly shows that there's a birth certificate showing he was born in Ethiopia. So for the government to maintain that there's a problem with identifying who he is or where he comes from, that is also inaccurate. Now, finally, Your Honor, that is nothing inconsistent about his removal to Kenya. And that's why the judge did not identify that as one of his credibility problems. He said it. There were refugee camps in Kenya for Ethiopians or Eritreans, Ethiopians of Eritrean origin, and they would rather deport a young man to Kenya than send him to Eritrea so he could join the army fighting against Ethiopia. That's a very reasonable and plausible. Most of the IJ's subjective findings were just based on what, you know, the entire ruling is full of self-serving. Question is, what kind of affidavit will an asylum seeker submit? It has to be self-serving.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Your
Honor. And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.